Welcome to Real GM Radio. I'm Danny LaRue, your host. So happy to have you with us. This is one of my favorite podcasts of the year. It is the Over-Unders with Arturo Galletti of Basketball Numbers. It's something I did last year with him and absolutely enjoyed. And the timing worked out pretty fortuitously because we ended up doing this closer to the start of the season, which means we get to talk about the way that the lines moved. So it works to me as a companion for the one that I did with Nate Duncan on the Dunked On Basketball podcast, because these are with very different lines, and you'll hear it with a couple teams that it meaningfully changed it. This is the Eastern Conference, and since this was the one we recorded first, we did a little bit of an intro explaining how we do this, so I'm going to let that speak for itself. This part runs about an hour 15. Hope you like it. Thank you so much for coming on.
It's a pleasure to be on. I haven't actually been on a podcast in 6 months, so it's almost a comeback tour for me.
Yeah, it's fun, and this was one of my favorite podcasts that we did almost a year ago. And to give people do you want to give people the basic lowdown of how we do this?
Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to look at where the Vegas line sits now. So the idea is Vegas is very, very sharp. They're very smart, and they generally set the lines at the right place. And what we're looking for is places where we disagree or slightly disagree and when there's value. I think we're just going to talk through that. A couple things to keep in mind is generally the shift in – so if you pick your team within plus or minus 6 wins, you're going to be right about – that's from last year. You're going to be right about 70% of the time, right? And generally, like, when you have large shifts, it's like because a major talent has moved, or because some team is in the tank or something weird has happened, or LeBron James decides to change his address, right? These are the reasons where, like, you have large shifts. So I think what we'll do is, I mean, we're going to talk through this and then kind of give what Vegas thinks, what the money's thought, what the models that we've done kind of think, and then kind of give our opinion. I mean, I think, and we'll see it when we get to the first team. Like, you know, sometimes there are little things that don't necessarily come up in the numbers, and we talk those out and there's some real value.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. And where we're starting, what we're going to do is we're going to go bottom to top in each conference. And bottom of the East is the Philadelphia 76ers.
Well,
go ahead.
I want to say, like, there's a great, I mean, like, I've been doing this for a while for running the over-unders. And it's been the Sixers over has been very good to me. And I have no reason to back off. Like, that 20 number is a very silly number for more than a couple reasons. One, I think that team is actually demonstrably better than they were last year. I mean, they were playing like a 26-win team. Noel was actually kind of a good player. They added Okafor, who was a good player. I don't think their incentive, if you look at their kind of draft picks, their draft incentives are a little strange. They're not necessarily they don't need to tank, basically, this year. I mean, they've got enough talent where, like, they don't need to have, like, a terrible record. And I think people kind of don't realize that Philadelphia was very purposely doing something. If you play really fast and you're really bad, you can inflate your loss total. And I don't necessarily think that's going to be the case. They were starting to slow it down last year. They're better defensively. I think this team, I mean, I'm not saying they're going to be a great team. I'm saying that, and my model's saying, like, that putting them in between 21 and 27 wins, right? And right now that number is at 20. I think that they're not, I mean, I think that they're at the point where, like, they're going to actually compete. And I wouldn't be surprised if they really kill that 20-win number. I mean, you might be sweating it, but I think the over is really nice here.
Something that you mentioned that I think is really important with this is 20 is a really low number. There are teams that fall below that. Minnesota did last year. Minnesota had 16, and the Knicks and the Sixers. But a lot of those were kind of disaster years, and 20 is an aberrationally bad year. And while the Sixers are bad, they're not that heinously bad. And I think that's important in this case. And so, yeah, they won 18 games last year. 20 is the number. From what I can tell, it sounds like you and I are both on the over here.
Yeah, no, I think we're both on the over. And I think, like, and you mentioned something that's really important, right? You can, if you go to Basketball Reference or go to any place where you can see the records and look at situations where you see over, like, where you see teams under 20 wins, and you can generally find, there's something strange going on when somebody goes under 20, right? Some incentive, you know, somebody's told to take an early vacation, some weird crap is going on. And what I'm just saying is, like, look, I think this team, it's the right place for it to compete. They have, like, I mean, there's a real chance that, like, on a majority of nights, they're going to have the two best big men on the court, right? And that's, you know, I mean, they don't have any guards, but, you know, when you have two talented bigs like Noel's and Okafor, it's really hard for me to see him like not winning 20 games, right?
They're also well coached, and they're going to be overlooked every time. They're going to be the team that everybody's ignoring to watch everybody else, and I think that's enough to really propel them. I mean, think about 20 wins. If a team wins 21 games, they're going 21-61. That's pretty remarkable.
I've been watching a lot. We had money riding on the over for this team, and we watch a lot of the games for the Sixers. And I enjoyed watching the Sixers. It is not a bad basketball product. If you're watching it on League Pass, they generally compete. Now they fall out, but I think that they're going to be more competitive this year, simply because I do think, like, if you look at the talent on the roster, this is actually starting to look like a promising roster. I wish they had somebody who could handle the ball. But I think that they have enough size where they, Hinky might find somebody. I'm disappointed they couldn't get somebody like Huertas on the team, but we'll get to Huertas in a bit.
Or Jeremy Lin.
Jeremy Lin would have been great for Philadelphia.
Would have been so much fun. But I think we can move on, because obviously there's nothing we need to talk about with title odds or division odds with them. And the next team is one that won a lot more games last year, the Brooklyn Nets. The Brooklyn Nets, we don't need to talk about if they got better or worse. They won 38 last year. Their over-under is 28. The question is, did they get that much worse?
Well, here's the thing. You know who my numbers say the worst player to play any significant amount of minutes in the NBA ever is?
Bargnani, right?
Yeah, Andrea Bargnani, no, former number one pick. Now, they added Bargnani. Bargnani's banged up, so he might not play that much. But, if he is significantly involved with this team, I kind of have to like the under. Now, it's very tight. I mean, I think Vegas set it at the right number, which is 28. I think they're going to try. The money's actually been on them on the under for this team, but I don't know that it necessarily kind of – it's a dangerous under because, I mean, you're always kind of – default bet is going under, but generally – because basically what happens is Vegas sets the line high, and so they – because they people like to bet over. And so I would conservatively bet the under on this team, but I probably wouldn't put my money down because I don't know that Bargnani plays enough minutes to take them under. If Bargnani plays a full season, this is a cake under.
There are two other huge components here. One is that they don't have their pick, so that means they have zero incentive to tank. It's the reverse of a team like the Lakers or the Mavericks, which we'll get to later. And secondly, one of the things that we'll talk about a lot during this that I like to think about is kind of a best-case, worst-case scenario. And so Brooklyn's best-case scenario, because the East is so bad, I think there's an outside chance, especially with the Hornets losing MKG, that they make the playoffs. I'm not expecting it. I think there's an outside chance. But their worst-case scenario is far below 28. You think about something paralleling the Knicks last year. They're a little bit better than that, and Melo was hurt. We don't know about Brook Lopez, so it's maybe not that bad, but it's definitely in the low 20s. So when you see something with that big a variance, I would always lean towards staying away.
But they don't own their pick. That's the thing with me. It's like, so as a Celtics fan, I'm rooting for the under. Like, as a Celtics fan, I was excited when the Nets signed Andrea Bargnani because I was like, damn, we're going to get a lottery pick in Boston next year.
But I was thinking about this, and I knew that you'd have a thought on this, that how lucky they got that Flip Saunders wanted Kevin Garnett because, that's, if memory serves, that's how they got Thaddeus Young. And if they hadn't gotten Thaddeus Young, this team would be even worse than they are now, and the Celtics would be getting an even better pick.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of a secret. I mean, again, I wish I knew, but this team is kind of, you don't know what the hell Billy King's going to do, but I think that, gun to my head, I would bet that this team is worse at the end of the season than it is now. And I think that under is cake because I do think their division is going to be rougher, better than it looks. I actually like all the teams in the division better than the over. I think I in general like the Atlantic, except for the Nets, right? And I mean that I like them against what Vegas is picking them.
Mm-hmm. And anything else you want to say on the Nets?
No. All I say is like the we'll talk about it, but like imagine Thunder could have had like Brook Lopez for the same money they're paying Cantor.
Yeah, that's something to think about. I was thinking about if they had used those resources to try to get Powell, considering where the Bulls were, but that's a separate thing. We'll move on to the Knicks. The Knicks had a season from hell, I think is probably the best way to put it, to use a trademark Bill Simmons phrase, but they won 17 games last year. They're over-under at this point, having seen some significant movement, is now at 28.5.
Actually, I was going to say about this. So you're on the under for the under or over for the Nets?
I'm on the over, but I wouldn't bet it at all. I wouldn't touch it.
Yeah, over, but don't touch. It's like, I must say, I think we're both on the same page. It's like, don't touch it.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're both, it's kind of like 55 or 45% one way or the other. And so when you're that unsure, you shouldn't put money on it.
On the Sixers, would you put money on the Sixers over?
If I bet on basketball, I'd consider it. I don't think it's the best bet on the board, but I think it's a decent one.
I'm going to say, I'm going to put a note saying, I'm basically writing this down. I'm saying we both think it's, I mean, I think it's good. I think it's a good bet. I think 20 is a good bet. I think the Knicks, and I said this, the Knicks are always, the Vegas always gets the Knicks wrong. I love the Knicks. I think the Knicks over is cake. Have you seen the Porzingis video, by the way?
Which one?
The rap video.
I have. It's magnificent.
Oh, my goodness. We have to link that. That is the best. They should play that every time he makes a basket during the season. That should be playing at, like, at the Garden. It is amazing. I mean, I love everything that filled it. And here's the thing, and this is underrated. Andrea Wignani was their starting center for a significant portion of last season. They now have Robin Lopez. Robin Lopez is a legitimate, like, NBA quality center. Like, I would say he's a, you feel comfortable saying he's a top 10 center. So they added him. Mel's healthy. They have Calderon back. They have talent on this team. I mean, I'm not saying they're going to be a great team, but I think that 28, it's gone down three wins, and I would have taken the Knicks over at 31.5. I really would have.
I'm not as high on them as you are, but I think that 28.5 is really low. You think about what the Kings did last year, so the Kings had a really rough go of it. They won 29. And so I think that's there. My issue with the Knicks is I have trouble, other than Melo, really seeing how they beat people. They don't have a good enough defense. They have better offensive rebounding. Robin Lopez can help with that. But I have trouble, like, for me, this isn't as clear. I think it's more of a stay away. But I do see why you're optimistic.
I mean, come on. They've got Calderon, right? Like, you've got two guys who can pass and move the ball, and Calderon. And Lopez can pass the ball, too. I mean, I think the ball movement will be really good on this team. I think Melo is obviously, I mean, I'm not the biggest Melo fan in the world, obviously, but I think he's way better than what they had before. And again, I think this team has talent, and I think that Phil is moving in the right direction. I do think that it would be a really interesting spot for them, and I've said this. I think they should move Melo. And before the Knicks fans get crazy, I actually do think that they would be better off getting pieces for Melo, because I think I've said this about Melo is a rich man's third banana, right? And like, he's the third best guy on a championship team, on the right championship team, I think. He's not the guy who's carrying your team, and he's kind of wasted on the Knicks, right? And I think the problem is also, you know, he's also getting to the point where, like, he's older, and this is kind of the wrong fit for him. But if you can move him for like four or five parts and plug it into this roster, I really like kind of what they have. And again, it's because it's a 28 number. I would never take them at 41. But at 28.5, I love the over for this team.
One other thing to mention, we talked about this with the Nets. New York does not have their pick, which is another incentive, because they had a pick swap with Denver, but they traded their pick out of the pick swap to Toronto because of the aforementioned Andrea Bargnani. So again, this is a team to talk about that they have no incentive to lose. So they don't, you know, even if they, you know, theoretically blow it up, which is of course a possibility, you know, if they got an offer for Melo, I agree with you. I think they should take it.
Yeah, but if they traded Melo, let's say they trade, and let's say it's a hypothetical trade with, like, say the Bulls, and they get Mirotic and Taj Gibson back.
I don't think they would get either of those guys. But like, I think Melo's, I mean, maybe they get Taj because Taj is maybe potentially superfluous.
You think they can't get? I mean, like, and I put this out on Twitter, and people were mad at me, but I was like, you know, it. I mean, it's really sad that you can't get Mirotic back for Melo.
Oh, absolutely not. I think that Mirotic is, well, so Melo is at this point in his career and his life, I'm not sure that he is a net asset at his current contract.
Let's hypothetically trade Melo, right? So kind of like how you guys do when you're doing the contracts. Let's say, okay, Daryl Morey calls Phil Jackson up and say, let's get this done. I want to win the title. Give me Melo. So what does it take to get Melo from Phil? Is it Ariza and Monta Yunus and Capella and Terrence Jones?
I think it's as much salary as it takes to get the deal done, and that's it. I don't think they get any extra assets.
But if you If you take the Knicks, right, and you take Melo away and you give them
Ariza and Brewer and Montayunas
and like Capella and Terrence Jones, isn't that a better team?
That's an interesting. Basically, your idea is that to get enough money to make the trade feasible, they'd be getting enough value to make the trade workable. Right. I think that's a very interesting point that I hadn't considered.
And what happens is, like, keep in mind, what happens with the Knicks is it's a situation where, like, you know, it isn't as much the fact that you're taking Melo off the one spot. It's the fact that you're giving these minutes to all these parts you get back who will be decent parts, will take him from, like, the crap at the bottom of the roster.
They're also super shallow, which, again, feeds that
right.
point.
Which is, like, so it makes it a better team. So I do think that, like, this is a team where, like, I like the over, and I like the over more if they make a blockbuster trade. Because I do think that, like, if they make a blockbuster trade, it'll make them more solid across the board. Right, and I already like some of the parts that are there.
I think we're anything else on the Knicks? I think we're about done.
No, I think we're about done on the Knicks. What do you think of?
So we have I don't love it. I see a little bit of disaster potential with them. 28, but at the same time, 28 is a low number. It's a stay away for me. My instinct is that they're going to go under it, but I see the optimism. I'm not there yet.
They also play in the Titanic. I mean, it's...
They do. But I think that the Raptors and the Celtics will be competitive enough that I don't think they'll win too many of those games. I'm not going to say they'll win zero, but they won't win too many.
Yeah, the one thing that would scare me about that is if Isaiah Thomas ended up in control of that team. And in that case, then all bets are off.
Well, yeah, and they can't really do a fire sell because they don't have anybody to fire sell. So that helps.
The trade asset is Melo. And I do think we're in a season where, like, with the nuclear wars going on in the West, and you know, and the fact that, like, the contracts are getting kind of ridiculous, that even that ridiculous Melo contract is not something that couldn't get moved. I do think
issue there is no trade. I mean, if you have to have the right situation, so I think that you're right that the West probably makes more sense just because those teams have more expensive talent and they have more incentive, but. Yeah, I think it's gonna depend on, you know, on him wanting to go to the right circumstance, because he can veto anything.
Yeah, I do think that he's the most interesting trade piece. Well, I mean, he's the second most interesting trade piece out there. We'll talk about the most interesting trade piece in a bit.
I'm scared, but I think I know who you're getting at. But we'll move on to Charlotte. Charlotte last year won 33 games. I think it was a rough, very rough season for them. They don't have Lance Stephenson anymore. But they also don't have Michael K. Gilchrist because he injured his shoulder. He's out for the year. And so their numbers moved a little bit, but it's still at 31.5.
Yeah, I think you really like this team when we first started talking about the over-unders.
Yes, and Nate and I both did. That has since changed a little bit because they lost one of their best players, and they don't really, you know, they didn't really have a suitable replacement because they traded Matt Barnes. But I still think they're better than they were last year.
Yeah, but I mean, they were a 33-win team last year. I think the rest of their division got better. I'm not sure about the Wizards, but we'll talk about that in a bit. But I mean, the problem with this team is they can play defense, but they can't hit a shot in the ocean, right? That was the problem with this team. And they traded the best kind of offensive piece in. They let Josh McRoberts go, and people may be thinking I'm weird about this, and no, but McRoberts can move the ball, and this is actually simple. We'll talk about Miami in a bit, but he can move the ball. He could get them kind of better offense, and they replaced him with Lance, and that was a problem. And now, I like the Lin addition, and I think he's kind of the complete exact opposite of Lance Stephenson in terms of what he brings to the table. So how are they? So the problem is, like, so you've got Lin on the floor. You've basically made your defense worse. But where's their offensive punch? Where are they getting the point? Where are they getting the buckets? I mean, that's my question. It's always been my question with this team. And you take MKG out of it, and so their defense is not as good. So I think I agree with you in that, like, I slightly like the over. The model has him slightly over, but I would stay the hell away.
I like the over. I think that they're better defensively than they should be. They're one of those. It's one of those examples in basketball where I don't know why they're so good defensively, but they've showed it enough that I'm willing to give them the credit. Steve Clifford has done a wonderful job as a defensive coach. And they have so many lottery tickets, I guess is probably the best word for it, at the positions where they're weak, particularly at power forward, that I'm going to rely on the logic that somebody will work. And I think that they have enough with everybody else. And when you have a season as rough as the one they just did, and you could do that poorly and still win the bet, I don't feel as great about it as I did before, but and it's not, you know, one of my best bets anymore, but I still feel like they're going to win more games than 32. 32 or more, actually.
So you like it, but you don't love it.
Yes, that would be the best way to put it, and I wouldn't touch any of their other odds with a 10-foot pole just because that's going to be way too hard for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think the teams we've seen so far, none of them are... We haven't liked the conf... You know, there's the title odds, the conference odds, and the division odds we're looking at. None of these are a good value. So it's like, we'll get to some, but right now none of these is a good value for that.
Well, so we'll move on to the Magic. The Magic last year won 25 games. They had, you know, it was a season that had some reason for optimism. And their over-under was originally at 32.5. Now it is at 34.5. And that was jarring to me, but I'll let you talk first.
I love the under. Love it. Love it. Could not love it more. And again, the reason is, I mean, here's the thing. I like Orlando. I think they're a fun team to watch. They've got some exciting young pieces, but they're not quite ready yet. They changed coaches, right?
Yeah, they have Skiles, who... But one of the things that people don't think about with them is, yes, they were really bad defensively. They were underratedly terrible defensively. But they were bottom six offense and defense, and they're bringing back largely the same team. I mean, they're on the side where age-related time passage is a very big positive for them because their guys are young and raw.
I think 32.5 was a nice number for them, right? That's where they started. Now at 34.5, it's love the under. I mean, I think I like the stat model thinks they're about a 28 to 29 win team. I think there's, as I said, if at 32 at 32.5, I would have been like, you know, the same thing you're saying. They're going to improve with age. But at 34.5, I'm like, no, you got to with the under.
Yeah, I mean Miami won 37 last year, and I granted they were better than their record because they just had so many injuries, but this team is on pure talent. They're not better than any of the teams we're going to talk about next. They're could be good, but I don't think their talent level is anywhere close. Well, it's close, but and it's not stronger than the Pistons or the Pacers, and it's not like they have better coaching either.
If the Hornets and the Magic played 100 games, how many games does each win?
I think the Hornets win 55.
We just said we don't love the over on Charlotte. So at 3 extra wins, I mean, I love the under on Orlando.
Yeah, so do I. I think that's really all we need to say with them, though. So Detroit, team I just mentioned because I think that's relevant to this discussion. Detroit won 32. Their biggest wholesale change in some ways was the removal of Greg Monroe, but also the implementation of players that make sense with Stan Van Gundy's system. And their number has gone up meaningfully from 33.5 to 36 flat.
The sharp money is all, and when I say the sharp money is like all the smart bettors are betting on, or were betting on Detroit early at the 33.5 number.
33.5 was hilariously low.
33.5 was like that was Christmas money. That's free money. That team, people forget that team was really good at one point, and just they lost. They got hurt, but they started making a charge. They started playing much better. I think that, I mean, Stan is a brilliant coach. He's arguably one of the, I'd say he's top three in the league, and he's a smart guy. He's building a team the right way around it. I think this team is a shoe-in for 500. I think they're going to get a 500. So at 33.5, it was a laughable number. 36 is a little rougher, but I still like it. My model has him at 35.5, and then the Winchers has him at 41. I think that's slightly low. Stan is one of those coaches that will make players better because he'll get them taking smarter shots, right? So I think that's a slightly better. As I said, I would have loved it to 33.5. 36, I like it, right? I like the over. I don't love it. If a couple of the other teams in that division weren't banged up, I'd like it less, but I like the over for this team.
I do too, and almost to echo it, I like it, I don't love it anymore. At 33.5, that's pretty ridiculous, just because that's basically what they did last year, and they should be better. I mean, it's another year with a good coach. That's a huge adjustment for them, and their talent is better suited. They got Reggie Jackson, who I think had good chemistry with Drummond. I think they paid him too much money, but he's still good. And at this point, how much you pay somebody doesn't really matter in terms of what you predict the record, because the roster is the roster.
Do we like it or do we love it, the over?
I don't love it. I like it. If it was still at 33.5, I would love it. But that's a big jump, because now what happened before is, at 33.5, at 33.5, I think some of their worst case scenarios were still a win. Now their worst case scenarios put you in the losing category. So that to me is what takes it from love to like.
You know what I love about the Pistons?
What?
I love 10,000 to I love 10,000 100 paying 10,000 on them winning the division.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, Cleveland, I think, is going to be better, but at the same point, that's so much money.
It's 100-1. I mean, it's like a couple of years ago we ran the Raptors, and it was fun. There was something like I think it was like 16-1, and it was great. And I like it. I mean, again, I think partly because of how I feel about the rest of the teams in that conference, and partly that I feel that Cleveland won't necessarily care. So, I mean, if Stan is 1 year ahead of schedule and he gets the right play, I could see this team. I mean, it would take them winning like 47, 48 games and a couple other things breaking their way. But, I mean, 100-1, I think that's a really nice bet, a division bet.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting one. And we'll move on to another team in the same division. The Indiana Pacers, without Paul George last year, won 38 games. It started at 42.5. It has since moved down to 40. I have, or 40.5, sorry, that changes it pretty substantially for me.
Yeah, I mean, I at 42.5, I would have liked the under. Not loved it, I would have liked it. Although, kind of the Winchester's model kind of doesn't like this team at all. There's, I mean, like, Roy Hibbert is an underestimated asset. Like, basically, so who's protecting the rim for this team now?
No one. I mean, Mahimi's actually not terrible at rim protection. He just doesn't bring much else.
Yeah, but they're going to have George playing at the four.
That's the issue, is that they don't have the support. And they're perimeter defenders other than George Hill, so like basically the two and the three, assuming they play George at power forward, are not going to be strong defenders.
I love their coach. I think he's a brilliant coach. I think that this team might be in trouble, and I think this might be the last run with a synchronization. I mean, I could see this kind of just blowing up in everybody's faces. That said, at 40.5, I think that, you know, just on muscle memory, they can get the 40 and a half. I mean, they got the 38 last year, and the roster, like, the roster for Indiana last year was a crime. I mean, it's hard for me not to see them at 40.5, but I would not touch. I mean, I'd tentatively go over. I think they're actually going to win 41 games, and I wouldn't touch this with a 10-foot pole.
I like the under, but it's the most tepid like I can give. You know, it's not in that 45, I'd say, you know, more like a 60% one for me. The issue is that I don't see them having an identity anymore. This is a situation where what they did so well is something that I don't think they can replicate. This isn't a circumstance like with Clifford we talked about, where I give them deference in terms of their defense. I don't do that for Vogel because he just had David West and Roy Hibbert there, and they're gone.
Yeah, you guys can't see me writing, but I'm writing "stay away" in giant bold.
Yeah, stay away. Like I'm not saying, oh, you should put much money on it, but
I'm writing it.
I know you can't, but if you could short title odds, I think that might be my favorite title odd to short on the board.
It's 50-1. I mean, I like Paul George. I mean, I think there's a world where like Paul George takes over. I think he's great, but the problem is like the rest of this roster is just so bad.
I see no way for them to win a title. I mean, what team in the West that makes the playoffs are they better than?
It's like, wait a second, win a title? How do you see them making the playoffs? It's like, how are they making the playoffs in the East?
I can see them making the playoffs if they go 500. 500 might be enough to do it.
I mean, I don't know. I don't think 500 gets you in this year. I mean, like, I think that, like, I think that, like, you might have four teams in the Southeast that are, like, a 500 or better. And then, like, I think that, you know, you can have two in the Atlantic, and then you can have three in the Central. I mean, you're obviously going to have some bad teams at the bottom of both conferences, but I don't think this is a year where 500 gets you in the East. I think you're going to have to win 42 games or more. I think that's my feeling. So I think hard for me to talk against Larry Legend, but I think that I mean I don't know how they make this roster work. I just can't see it.
I mean, it has to be Paul George feels it, but even then, we haven't seen a team that dominated by a singular player move into that realm, into the even plus 500 in a little while. I mean, we might see it this year, but there's going to be some challenge. But are you ready to move on to Boston?
Yeah. Would you rather have Paul George or Kawhi Leonard?
Kawhi. Yeah. Especially because Paul George, I mean, while he's played well in the limited amount we got to see him since his injury, there's a substantially more uncertainty with him than with Kawhi.
Oh, I'd love Kawhi playing the four. I mean, I think that's, I mean, and Pop throws it out sometimes. I think that would actually be interesting. He would murder people just because of his hands and his length.
And he can dribble. I think both of them have it, but what the San Antonio has is they have complementary talent to make that work. The Pacers don't, you know. Yeah. What are you going to do? You're going to put Zach Randolph on CJ Miles? Yes, who cares? That's not a problem. You can't, depending on what you do with San Antonio can put guys who can dribble, guys who can penetrate, guys who can shoot out there, which means that you, like what the Warriors did to them, that you can't compensate in the same way.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think we're both agreed. I mean, yeah. We stay the hell away from that one.
Yeah, stay away. I mean, because even though I like the under, I wouldn't feel comfortable betting against Paul George or Frank Vogel. This is the year, but what I am completely open to the possibility that it all falls apart this year.
Yeah, they might blow it up. I think that's Paul George might not be playing for this team next year.
Like, oh, see, I don't think they're going to trade him because I can't imagine a trade that would be workable. I like Paul George. Paul George, to me, it's one of those things, like, if a player could voice a trade demand and they would actually be traded, that would happen, but I don't think it'll.
What if the Celtics back up the lottery picks?
Yeah, but I mean, what are the odds with the Celtics picks? I mean, if the Celtics back up the lottery picks and the Nets are playing terribly,
then you start to think about it. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, like, there are scenarios where it could happen. I mean, and I don't want to get hate mail from Pacers fans. I'm just kind of going, like, I just look at this roster and go, like, I mean, I think Vogel did a fantastic job. I think he's fabulous. I just don't see. I mean, he just doesn't have enough. He doesn't have enough weapons, and that's it's just a problem. Well,
and the guys they added are basically all bad defenders. So they didn't replace, you know, they didn't even try to come close to replicating or anything like that. They just went with a different model, and I don't think it's going to work.
Yeah, just, no.
Boston, team near and dear to your heart. Last year they won 40 games. They started at 42.5. A little bit of sharp money pushed it to 43.5.
They played like a 40, and part of the reason is they played like a 49-win team the second half of the season. They're actually pretty good, and they actually, I mean, they added talent. So this is a team that actually got better in the offseason. They have depth. I'm not going to talk about what they did in the draft because. And do you remember? I was like myself and Snotty were both kind of just like shaking our hands and wringing our hands and like pulling our hair because they went with Rozier instead of Portis.
Yeah, but I love RJ Hunter. Granted, he's not going to play a whole heck of a lot this year.
But do you think that, like, is there anybody other than Danny who doesn't draft Portis before Rozier if we did the draft?
Oh, yeah. Him? I mean, they could have gotten Portis and RJ. You know, that's not saying, oh, well, that justifies it. I actually had so much trouble grading their draft because, the other issue with it is Rozier doesn't make them better. I'm not saying he's a bad player, but they had zero need for what he does.
Yeah, my theory was Danny, like, is having a midlife crisis, and he's drafting guys who just remind him of himself, right?
You know, we've talked about this for years. This isn't the first time you and I have had this exact conversation.
Yeah, it's like, oh God, Danny, what are you doing? I mean, here's the thing. Caveat: I am a Celtics fan, so I'm probably not objective about this. I like the roster. I love the coach. I wish they'd gone. They needed to go for a home run ball, and they didn't do it. I thought Portis was a home run ball in the draft. And it kills me that he's very much looking like – he's basically looking like he's going to cost, like, a Taj Gibson his job, basically. Because he's just, you know, lining up and shooting threes. He's a really good player. This is not a dig on Rozier. I just – you know, I don't see why – I mean, like, why do you draft Rozier if you sign Isaiah Thomas to a contract? I mean, it's a really weird – it's like building a fantasy team in football and drafting five quarterbacks. I don't – I mean, like, there might be great quarterbacks, but you can't play them all at the same time. And that's kind of a problem with this team. So
they just traded for Isaiah Thomas with a late first round pick. So it's not like they think his value is going to get super high. It's not like when you talk about drafting five quarterbacks, where if you do that, some other team is going to be desperate for a quarterback. Nobody's breaking down the bank looking for a point guard except for the Phoenix Suns, who just traded that amazing Lakers pick for Brandon Knight.
Yeah. So I think part of the problem is so Brett Stevens is not a tanking coach.
No.
And actually, I've talked to people in the front office of the Celtics, and they've said this, which is like, he's exactly the wrong coach if you want to tank. He's not a guy who's going to tank. He's going to win. So I think 42.5, I would have slightly liked the over. I think 44 is probably the right number on this team. Here's the thing, and I've said this before. I've said this for the last three seasons for the Celtics. The Celtics are a coin flip, right? I think they're going to aggressively try to make a move. I think they've been getting assets. I think they've got picks. I think if any superstar wants to bolt, I think the Celtics are going to try to be the trade partner for it. They have all the assets to surround somebody, but they don't have that somebody. And I think that's kind of what their goal is. So I think it's like, I think they're going to be good and competitive. I think that 43 is about right, right? So I mean, like, that's, I think, where they're going to be. So I mean, I think I would say that I slightly like the under because I really like Brad Stevens, but again, this is another stay away because you don't know. I don't think that there's any chance that this is the roster they have now. I think that there's a good chance that about 20% of these players aren't here come February.
I like the over, and I like it a meaningful amount. I don't love it, but I like it a lot because you talked about how they can make moves. I see every one of their moves making them better because what they have in terms of assets are future assets. And so I think that they could do that to get better. This, as you said, was a team that was basically a 49-win team after the deadline. They have a great coach. The sticking point with them is that they weren't as good as their record. And set, like it doesn't seem like they're as good as their record. But just like I talked about with Steve Clifford,
their point differential was as good as a 49-win team.
Yeah, so I guess what you say... I guess what you say at that point is, you know, like, whether or not you think they're talent-wise as good as they played, they did it for a meaningfully long enough stretch. This isn't like the Pistons where it was, you know, a couple weeks. They did it for a long enough stretch where I don't feel like I'm confident in a stone-cold lock, but I think they're about that good. And I think they got meaningfully better. I think Amir helps them a lot.
They had no center. They literally had no center. And they haven't had a center for 2 years. And adding David Lee and adding Amir Johnson, right? And we both know they have their flaws, but they're both like NBA caliber players, right? And again, David Lee has been an all-star. I mean, I don't think he necessarily is that guy anymore, but he does have some skills. Amir is a kind of a, you know, he's not, I wouldn't say he's a top 10. So like, I'd rather have Robin Lopez than Amir, but I don't think that Amir is a, you know, he's an above average center, right? So adding those two pieces to that team with that coach, I slightly like the over.
The most important thing to mention here also with that is that they have so much depth at most positions, not everywhere, but at most positions where if a guy isn't good, they don't have to play him anymore. This isn't a team where they're going to be trapped like the Knicks were last year playing terrible guys. They have probably 13 or 14 NBA caliber players. And so that means that I don't love Jared Sullinger, but if he's out of their rotation, he's one of the better players that's not in a rotation.
Yeah, what I'm really worried about is somehow, some way, I think it's my fate. It's my karmic fate. You know, I've been having a really good, like, sports year with the Pats and everything else. Somehow, Melo's going to wind up on the Celtics, and I'm going to hate every minute of it.
I don't think that's going to happen. You can sleep a little bit better, but you ready to move on to Milwaukee?
Yeah, do you like the division number for them? They're bet 100, win 225 to win the division.
Yeah, I do. I think that if you're as positive as I am on their over, that seems to me like a better return.
Do you like their conference odds?
No.
Okay.
There's only one team that I would ever put money on to win this conference other than the you're getting such a crazy number that you have to consider it.
You know, I think that I'm a little more bearish on that particular team, but we'll get to that.
Okay, so Milwaukee, they won 41 last year. Their number was at 43.5. Now it is at 44.5.
And I like the under.
It's high. It's high.
Keep in mind that after people forget this, when they traded for MCW, they stopped being that good. They were like, I was touting them as like, their title odds were way too low, but then they kind of made...
And I loved the Bucks last year. That was one of our best calls.
We loved them before the season, and I think I didn't like the MCW trade because...
The MCW trade was a terrible trade.
Terrible trade, and they play like a 35-win team in the second half after the deadline. And my model thinks there's 33. My model and the WinShares model both agree the 33 wins. The money is at 44.5, and like, I mean, I would have liked the under at 43.5. At 44.5, I'm kind of like, ugh. Now here's the thing, caveat. I think that Jason Kidd is a brilliant coach, right? he does magical things with offense and getting people to play. It's just that is a really high number. It's more competitive. It's a young team. I mean, again, you're going to add Jabari, but I think I think that at the end of the day, I'd be slightly under on this. I think they're going to be about 42, 43 is about right.
Yeah, this is exactly why I like this number a lot in terms of betting it, is that it's hard for me to think that they'll be much better than it. So if you think about the universe of options, I think that their like 75% outcome, like so the better quarter, is probably somewhere around where their line is. And so when you get a when you get in that kind of circumstance, that means that you can feel a lot more comfortable betting it.
Yeah, I think the problem is like I don't feel comfortable betting against Jason Kidd. I really don't, right?
I feel comfortable betting it when they're this confident in him and this team was not that strong. I mean, they did get better, meaningfully better than they were after the deadline because they have Jabari coming back. They have Greg Monroe, who I like quite a bit. I think he cures some of what ails them. But I don't think that a team this flawed offensively comfortable winning. I don't feel comfortable with them winning 45 games and saying like, oh yeah, they're going to do that. They could. I'm not going to say they can't. They most certainly can.
So let me throw a hypothetical out there at you. So season goes on, Indiana decides, oh crap, this isn't going to work. And so they talk to Milwaukee and they trade George Hill for MCW.
But yeah, I mean, in that kind of a circumstance, then the Bucks get a lot better. But I just don't see the Bucks as a team, again, that really has assets. You know, I think that they are confident enough in their group that they're what I would call pot committed. They're not going to make that kind of a trade unless it's ridiculous. And the best way to talk about that is they could have gotten the Lakers pick. Instead, they chose MCW. And as much as you and I, if we were GMs, I mean, granted, we also wouldn't have traded for Michael Carter-Williams, but if you have the same people in charge, they're not going to cut bait, even if cutting bait is the right move, this quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I understand their team concept is they're going for length, right? And I think that they're trying stuff. They're trying stuff with Giannis. I mean, I think that so I think that there's like a 10% chance that this team wins 50 games or more, right? The bomb is like, you know, again, I'm setting the line. And if I'm setting the line at that 43.5 number, I think that there's like a 60% chance that they're 44.5. I think there's like a 60% chance that they're below it. With the caveat that actually this is one team that they're basically a ball handler away. This is kind of like if they got a slight upgraded ball handler, I would be all over this.
If they had traded for Isaiah Thomas instead of Michael Carter-Williams?
Oh, yes. But I think here's the thing. Like, we see this. Like, you can get a ball handler, right? And like, I mean, hell, like, Miami went out and got Goran Dragic. I mean, like, you can get a ball handler. Like, Boston got Isaiah Thomas. Like, there will be guys moving at some point in the season. So I think, like, I go with the under. I don't love it at all. I think this is a stay-away situation.
I can see that. Washington, last year, they won 46 games.
What do you have the under or over?
Oh, Bucks under.
Under. Yeah, and do you like it or?
I like it.
I'm gonna say stay away. I'm writing this down so we can put this up later. But like I say stay away. You say like.
Yeah, we should put that on. We should put it like on Twitter or something so we can actually search it, or you can send it to me in an email. But okay. So we'll move on to the Wizards. The Wizards are a 46 win team. That's what they were last year, and their over under is set at the same number, 45.5.
And actually, the model hates it. Both models have them at 41 wins. The money's actually moved. It's actually, this team, it is not moved. So basically, if they stayed exactly the same, they would hit the over. Now, here's the thing. I'll say a couple things about this team, which is interesting. So there's some noise around, like, Randy Whitman not running stupid offense during the season. What I mean by that is, like, this is, and this is your hometown team a little bit, right? Or a little bit.
My periodic hometown team, yes.
Yeah. So you and I both know that, like, Randy just ran some of the ugliest offensive sets that, you know, it's crazy. So, I mean, like, if this team actually starts taking smart shots, they're a better team. I like Beal. I think he's going to be a really good player. I like Wall. I like Gortat if Whitman ever played him in the fourth quarter. So, you know, I think that even though my model likes the under on this team, I would feel that they win 46 games. This is my feeling is that they're going to get smarter. I think Porter gets better. I think, and you saw this in the second half of last season, that this team actually, like some of the key players got better for the playoffs. I think that I would be at the 46. I would never, ever, 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 ever bet on a Whitman over. Ever. Ever.
Well, so one other piece of context that I want to put out there is Beal missed a stretch of games. I think he missed about 20. And we talked about how it's the same number that the Wizards had. It's also very similar to the number that New Orleans had last year. And I think that that, in some ways, for me, is a good barometer because while they don't have an Anthony Davis, they have a lot of talent. And they were a top five defense last year. They didn't lose anything to me that will make them meaningfully worse on that end. They can't use less of their offensive talent than they did last year. So I think they're going to be better. I don't think they're going to be a lot better, which is why I would stay away. But I do think if I had to bet it, I would bet the over.
Finish this sentence for me. If John Wall doesn't get hurt in the playoffs,
they make the Eastern Conference Finals.
I think they make the finals.
You're going to pick a Randy Whitman team over a LeBron team? Really? Really?
If everything happens the same and Kyrie gets hurt, and
Kyrie didn't get hurt until Kyrie was hurt in the conference finals too.
If Kyrie's hurt and if a healthy John Wall is going at Matthew Dellavedova, if I'm looking at that, I think that there's a real shot they would have gotten to the finals last year. And it was crazy to think, but this was like when the team actually, when Whitman got out of this team's way, this was a really good team, right? And again, like Cavs fan, don't get mad. I'm not saying that this team is better than the Cavs were last year. It's just like the reality of it was the Cavs just, you know, where they were a mash unit by the time that the Eastern Conference Finals. And I think that, like, they got lucky, right? And, you know, they got lucky that, like, John Wall got hurt, and they got lucky that the NYPD beat up Thomas Afolosha. And so neither of their opponents were basically, like, whole, right? So things broke, and we had the finals that we had. But it is really frustrating because I think that the worst thing that could have happened to this team was them being so good in the playoffs because that saved Whitman's job.
Yeah, I guess. Do you like their division odds better or the over-under better?
No, I hate their division odds. I think that, like, no, I don't think there's, they're not winning that division. I like their over slightly, but we both think of stay away. And I think their odds, it's 190. That's no. Unless you think they can win the conference, but no.
Okay. Toronto. Toronto won 49 last year. They were at 45.5. Now they are at 46.5.
They won 49 games last year, and the model thinks they're 48 or 49 win team. So, model thinks it's slightly over. So, here's a question: is DeMar DeRozan playing for this team past February?
If you and I were the GM, he wouldn't be. I think that this is actually leads me into something. I think that there is a meaningful chance that they overhaul their team midseason because they know what they are. And they could be comfortable with that. I mean, they're getting good crowds. There's a lot of enthusiasm. But I think they are positioned incredibly well for other GMs to get desperate and make a mistake. And you know better than I do that they have exactly the right GM for that to happen.
Yeah, I think, like, if we're smart enough to look at the numbers and realize that, like, DeMar DeRozan is the most overrated, like perceived good player in the league. Like, the Raptors know this as well, right? And, like, DeMar DeRozan is a free agent tomorrow. What's he getting in the open market?
Oh, some team would offer him close to the maximum. I'm not saying I would, but some team would. Look at Enes Kanter!
It's going to be crazy. I think DeMar DeRozan is a legit $100 million player. Like, he's going to get a $100 million contract, right? And I think that I don't think there's any world where Masai Urugi is paying him $100 million. So I think he's not on this team. So I like the over, and I think having this discussion and knowing Masai, I think, like, I love the over on this team. I'm going to say like, not love, right? Because I think that it's a little bit rougher, but I mean, I just don't see any way they don't win 47 games. I mean, I can't see it.
This is our biggest disagreement. I like the under. I don't love it. I would probably stay away from it. But first of all, you have the potential that they trade guys for players who are worse. Secondly, I think that they are very, very risk. They have a lot of risk because of injury because they don't have quality replacements anywhere.
Has Masai ever made a bad trade?
Masai can make a trade that makes them a whole lot better for next year and doesn't make them better this year.
But name one trade he's done that's done that. Why would he?
The Melo trade would probably qualify.
No, that team was better. It was immediately better. The plus minus were better. That team actually made a run after that.
Yeah, you could be right. I also think that I think I'm a little bit lower on them than your model. I'm not, you know, I just think we have a difference of opinion on it. But I would stay away. It's not one of those circumstances where it's like, oh, I think you're completely wrong. I'm not as comfortable with it as you are.
Yeah, I think I would. I mean, I trust the process, and I'm saying it for the wrong team, but I trust the process here. I think that, like Ian, I think that I just don't see this team not winning those 47 games. I would say, like, I don't love it. I mean, I'm gonna say I like the over.
Okay. Anything else on them, or you want to move on?
No. I think we move on. There's nothing. The division odds for them are like, they're like -325. I don't like that at all.
The Miami Heat, they won 37 last year. Their over-under started at 45.5. They're at 47.5 now, and I will preface this with one thing, which is I would have stayed away from this number unless it was comically ridiculous, just because this is the hardest team to put an over-under on in the entire league.
Yeah, basically the numbers now are saying they're going to be 10.5 wins better than they were last year. God. And really, this is kind of a referendum on, and I think I always say this, and I've said this before, I think, on the other podcast, which is, start thinking about what are the question marks on this team? It's like, so is Dwayne Wade healthy? Like, does Chris Bosh have anything left? Who is Justice Winslow? Can Hassan Whiteside repeat what he did? Will Goran Dragic, kind of merge with this team? You know, statistically, the model thinks they're about 40, like, one of them thinks they're about 40 wins, another thinks they're about 45. I mean, this team, 1-5, is really talented. But again, I think the caveat, so, like, how do you feel about Josh McRoberts? I love Josh McRoberts, right? So, I mean, this is a really hard team to call. I think, at the end of the day, at 45.5, I would have had the over. At 47.5, man, I think this team wins 47 games. I mean, that's where I am. And I think that's assuming that Dwayne Wade's leg does not fall off. So I think that I'm under, but just slightly on this team.
Yeah, I already said it'd be a stay away for me. I lean towards the under. The parallel here is, again, the Washington Wizards. The Wizards won 46 last year. And the Heat have a lot more variance, of course. But I don't think they're a ton better, given that you have to assume that Wade is going to miss time, and you have to assume that they're going to have other injury issues. You know, so like, if you were to tell me that all of their guys were going to play all 82 games, of course they're better than this. But you can't expect that with this team, and that's not their goal. So I think that they're going to go under, but as I've said, this is the stay-awayest of all stay-aways.
Now, here's the thing. I'm looking at the title odds for them, and I'm looking at the conference odds from them, and kind of going like,
I don't see a way they win the title.
But here's the thing: here's what happens. Like, the way the NBA playoffs are structured, they stop testing for any kind of medical aid after the first round.
I'm so staying silent.
You're not gonna say, I'm not gonna get you into trouble here, but what I'm saying is, like, basically, a team like the Heat or an older veteran team is kind of favored by this because, like, you know, all of a sudden, like, Dwayne Wade can, like, jump another feet higher than, like, you know, like he used to 5 or 6 years ago. So I think that, like, if this team actually is in that 47 win range, I could see this team kind of getting hot and making the conference finals. And I mean, that 14-1 number, that 40-1 number, is very intriguing to me because, again, you know, if you're in a situation where you look at, you could always get out or middle at some point. I think 14-1 is intriguing to me
because let me say this: the 40-1 I hate. The 14-1 interests me quite a bit because I could see a way that they win the conference. I just see no way that they win the title.
I want to say we are intrigued by their conference odds. And again, here's the thing: because we've already seen that the Cavs get hurt, right? And LeBron, if you get a LeBron injury and Kyrie's out and, like, you've got Love's back, then all of a sudden that's kind of a rich man's Timberwolves team. And I could totally see, you know, if LeBron's not there, I could see this Miami team.
Spoelstra's also a better coach.
Yeah.
I think so.
You know what? Here's the thing. Blatt out-coached the hell out of Kerr in the finals.
I disagree. I disagree pretty strongly with that.
Blatt basically pulled every single. I thought Blatt did a fantastic job in the finals, and I think that he's underrated at this point. I mean, I think he picked up, and he did.
Their regular season offense was a disaster.
That's fine, but he basically, like, it's like the boxer who, like, the older boxer who has to pull all these tricks out, and I think he did as much as he could with the limited roster that he had when he got to the finals. Because they really did have a limited roster by the time they got to the finals. So I think Blatt did a really good job. And I was impressed by that job that he did.
I do not give a coach credit for playing garbage ball when that's what you have. I really don't.
But he had to, I mean, like, look, you're there to win the game. He did what he had to do to make himself, they should have not been competitive in the finals.
Well, I mean, that's just, I don't think that's doing anything brilliant. I mean, what you do when you're at a huge talent disadvantage is you slow the ball down and you make sure your best player has the ball. I don't think that's okay, sort of procedural genius thing to do. I think that's what any smart coach does.
Okay, so you think Randy Whitman would have done the same thing?
That's not fair. Neither of us has Randy Whitman in the top.
Do you think Scotty Brooks does that?
You're still digging in the bottom 10.
Derek Fisher?
You're still digging in the bottom 10. Like, would Terry Stotts do it? Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, Terry Stotts would definitely do it. But again, I think...
Would Billy Donovan do it? Yes, absolutely.
Would Doc Rivers do it?
I feel like Doc would consider it.
Yeah, I mean, I think...
He just wouldn't change his rotations.
Yeah, I think, like, yeah, the guys on his bench would go, like, what are you doing, coach? But, okay, you know, it's... yeah. I think we agree. Miami is going to be really interesting. I mean, there's a world where this team, like, is fully healthy. Hassan Whiteside is continues to be a beast, and they're clear of 50. But there are too many ifs for me to kind of trust it, right? I think Dwayne Wade. I mean, Dwayne Wade could have a throwback season this year, but I mean, I wouldn't bet on it because I mean, I just don't trust him to be healthy, right? And that's what makes. I mean, again, I think that this team going in all cylinders is going to be a joy to watch because I think there's enough passing and things going on where this is intriguing. I can't bet on it.
They're my Eastern Time Zone League Pass favorite right now.
Oh, they're going to be super fun to watch.
Yeah. So different team now, Chicago Bulls. They won 50 last year. Their over under is set at 49.5.
Oh, bang that under so hard. So hard.
You and Coach Nick probably disagree on this pretty strongly.
Oh God, bang the under, bang the under. Like, okay, so here's the thing: Thibs was a really, really good coach at getting every single bit of wins you could get from the regular season. He basically just went hard at it, and so basically, I kind of expect that, like, you know, he was good for 5 wins just because he just rode his team so hard. And I think that given the fact that, like, this is an older team with, like, significant injuries, the fact that they've never wanted to get a backup for Derrick Rose, which they really should have, the fact that I don't trust Noah to be healthy. I mean, I think where it could be interesting is, you know, and I hate this, so, like, I could be really wrong if Portis I think Portis is good, but Portis could be really, really good. And if Portis is really, really good and they start making some moves, like maybe to get a backup point guard, then, you know, I mean, I'm recording now. I'm saying, like, if they do that and they get somebody to replace Derrick Rose and Portis is the next Kevin Love, then yeah, no, that's going to be over. But I do think that going to Hoiberg is a significant downgrade from Thibodeau. I mean, Thibodeau is one of the best defensive coaches we've ever seen.
And he had good defensive talent, and the team doesn't have good defensive talent anymore.
Right, and I think that the knock was like, well, you know, he wrote his players really hard. But if you write your players really hard, you win a bunch of games.
Yeah,
right?
And as a regular season coach, I think that's an important distinction to make. I disagree with you a little bit, not on the Tibbs difference, but on the talent. I think their talent is a lot better this year, partially because they got Portis and because Jimmy Butler missed 20 games last year. Like, Jimmy Butler missed a stretch. But because I think they're going to do a much better job of utilizing that talent on offense. And it's not like they were strong defensively last year, too. I mean, it's not like they're not in a situation like the Pacers, where they're going to fall off on one end and the gains they make on the other end aren't going to make up for it. They are going to be worse, but I don't think it's going to be a lot. That said, while I think they're going over, I would stay away pretty strongly from it.
At 49.5, I mean, like, notice the number hasn't moved. No, here's the thing. I think the way this is going is, like, the sharps are going under and the public is going over on that number. And I think that number, that's why it's staying. But I would say, look, it just, to me, Thibs is a great coach. And Hoiberg is a rich. I'm not saying Hoiberg is bad.
I'm gonna ask you a question. Dallas won 50 last year.
Right.
On talent, how do you compare this team to last year's Dallas team?
On talent.
Ignoring coaching entirely.
on talent. I think that, honestly, they're very, very similar teams, and they have the same kind of structural problems, which is they're older, and I trust the Dallas, I trust Dallas's medical staff much more than I trust Chicago's. So I would say that I think that talent-wise, they're about the same level. I think here's the thing. I think they have their best player this year is better than Dallas's was. And that best player is Jimmy Butler is better than, like, anybody on Dallas last year. I do think that Dallas had, like, some interesting pieces. I think Carlisle is better than Hoiberg, though. And I think that...
That's why I wanted to say on talent, because I think...
Medical staff for Dallas is plus-plus over the Bulls' medical staff.
I think that Chicago is better by a pretty decent margin, but the coach and the other injury factors and all that kind of stuff weighs against it. But I think that's, to me, is a good argument for why the Bulls could go over or close to this number. So that's why I would stay away from it.
Yeah, I think that, like, Tyson Chandler is way under... Everybody underrates Tyson Chandler.
Oh, Tyson Chandler is wonderful.
Tyson Chandler is wonderful. And, like, the problem is, like, if here's the thing. If Noah was Noah, right, this would be a no-brainer. But it sounds like Noah isn't Noah, right? And I think that that's going to be a real problem. And Powell is getting up there. So I think that... this team is going to have a defensive problem. They're going to have a real defensive problem. That's why I feel confident in the other just because of that. Because I think that, like, people are like, oh, they look good on offense. Yeah, but they can't protect, they're not going to be able to protect the rim. And I think that's going to be the problem.
I definitely think that's fair. We'll move on to Atlanta. Atlanta won 60 last year.
Are you on the over for this team?
I'm on the over, but I'd stay away.
Yeah. I think I like the under, and you're always safer betting the under, so I like the under.
That's true.
Do you like their title, division, or conference odds?
No. I think they're way too high. That I think you're trying to get the homer votes kind of on that.
Yeah, I think the line on this team, like, Chicago's a very public team. So I think the odds, and what I mean by public team is, like, I mean the public likes it. That means the public overbets it.
Like the Lakers.
Yeah, so that 49.5 number is meant to draw all the marks on the overside, and all the sharps are betting under. So I think that's – so I like the under, and I would feel fairly confident about it just because – I mean, it doesn't mean I think they're bad. I just mean, like, I think that there's going to be some issues with this team.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But we move on to Atlanta. 60 wins last year, one of the big success stories in the league. And this number started out at 49.5. It has moved up one game to 50.5.
So that tells you that the sharps are betting the over. So what do you think about – I mean, basically the line is set that Atlanta is going to lose 9.5 right now, 9.5 wins from last year. We loved Atlanta last year. We loved it. We wanted to marry the over. We loved their division odds. We loved everything about this team. So how do you feel about Atlanta at 50.5?
I like it. I don't love it. I think that's, to me, that's too close to what I think they're going to do for me to feel comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, like, the statistical models both like it. They both have it at 54.5 and 54.5. The sharp money has been going up. At 49.5, I loved it. At 50.5, I like it. I mean, I think that some injuries could take them. I mean, I still really like this team. I think this team is fantastically coached. I think that people underrate how good Thiago Splitter is, right? Going out and getting, like, Walter Tavares and Thiago Splitter to add to a team, that's pretty good, man. Like, Splitter is a really good rim. Now, he gets hurt, but they don't need him to be there for all the time. And I think it's kind of interesting because, like, if Horford gets hurt, you got Splitter. And between the two of them, like, I mean, they're going to be really rough. You know, they're going to be really good defensively. And there's nothing I've seen for this Atlanta team that makes me think that they're going to regress. I mean, this is a very well-run organization. They have a lot of talented players. And
Except the two.
Well, that's, I mean, sure, right? But I think I'm comfortable enough saying I like the over, though. I mean, I don't love it. I like it.
One thing I'd like to, that I honestly think has been infringing on my view of this team is, I think they're a bad playoff team. I think that they're what they're strong at is something that doesn't translate. But I think I'm inputting that too much on the regular season, because they play hard, they're incredibly well coached, and they have a lot of talent. I mean, it is true that they... losing to Murray Carroll hurts them a lot. I think that is something different, but they're more resilient to injury, both at the big man spots and at point guard, because Schroeder will be better than he was last year.
Yeah, I think that, you know, who's really, Splitter is really underrated for the playoffs, because Splitter has been a shutdown defender in the playoffs before. Now, again, you have to get him healthy there, but not only do I like the over, but I like the title odds for Atlanta at 25-1, and I like the conference odds for them as well. I don't love the division number, but I like the title and the conference number. And just because I think 25-1 is too, like, for any a team that's made the conference finals, that 25-1 number is too low. It's particularly coming out of the East, is too low.
I can see that. I don't like their title odds at all. But their conference odds, I think that's a nice little bit.
Yeah, but if you're betting 16, if you're saying that they're gonna be.
What team in the West do they beat in the finals?
I mean, I think with how well they're coached and the spacing that they have, I mean, like if the team that gets there is banged up, I mean, you're saying that.
Well, yeah, but is a banged up team gonna win the West?
It seems
unrealistic.
Well, they all, I mean, like last year, like everybody got hurt at the end. So, I mean, like, I think you're saying that at 16-1, it's 40% chance. Let's say they're really good and they run away with it and they get the one seed. And they get the one seed overall and they have home court. So I'm saying if like Atlanta has home court, I think 25-1. I mean, I'm just saying I like the 25, I like the 16-1 probably better, but I think the 25-1 number is intriguing and I might look at it, see if it goes to like 30 or 40-1 at some point.
See, I would never bet the 25, I consider the 16.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I think we don't love him as much as we did last season, but we like them.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
So we're both on the over on this.
Yes.
One. Okay.
Cleveland Cavaliers. They won 53 games last year. Of course, that was a season that a lot happened, and their number was at 56.5 and has been pushed up to 57.5.
Ooh, really? God, I thought 56.5 was 56.5 was the tastiest under on the board. It's just tasty, so tasty was that under. And at 57.5, it's ridiculously tasty. You're saying that this team is like, so they won 53 games last year. You're saying this team with Kyrie hurt, with Shumpert out. You're saying with those two things going on, and like really, they're gonna basically shut it down during the season at some point. You're saying they're going to win. What is it, 5 more games? No, that's not happening. I think the under for this team is like, it's the easiest under on the board.
Right? Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love played a combined 150 regular season games last year. The odds of them doing that again this year are exceedingly low, because they did 75 each. I mean, it's Kyrie's even himself is not going to do that.
He's out.
He's out for a while. I mean, that might not be enough to push the combined number, but
I can't actually believe this number went up. I mean, Shumpert's out. I mean, like,
what's Shumpert's out.
I literally tweeted out, say, like, grab the Cavs under now. It's going to go down. I thought it was going to go down, but they're a public team. I mean,
And because they don't have an incentive, because I think that what's the story with them to me is very easy. It's that they're going to be the best team in the East. I think they're going to probably have a little bit of a buffer, but they're not going to be ahead of the best teams in the West. So they're just going to coast.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's going to come to a situation where like, they're not going to have a chance at the one seed and they're going to, God, I wish I could take the Bulls aren't that great, but I mean, I think that like, I mean, I can't like this under more. I mean, you're saying they're going to win 58. They're going to win 58 games with the current medical situation they currently have for the team. I can't see. I mean, I just can't see it. It's like Dar'Ish Smith is going to be playing like start. It's going to be started for them for a significant portion of the season.
I'm going to say something right now that, considering what we've just said, is going to blow you away. I think that Cleveland is the most likely champion. That doesn't mean I'm saying I would bet their title odds.
I'm not disagreeing. No, I completely agree with you. I just think 57.5 is a ridiculous number.
So do I. and that's what you're looking for. Like, if you're somebody who bets the sports, you want to find something where even the people who like parts of their team think that it's an amazing bet.
Oh, you can. I mean, like, and again, if somebody's doing it, like, look, you bet the under on this team, and there comes a point in the season where just start betting the money line on the games. If it's going against you, you can figure out a way out of it. I just think that 58 number is ridiculous. I mean, and going up, I mean, like, God, there's gotta be sharps in Vegas that have like all the action on this. Because again, as I said, it's like, again, I don't see how you, I mean, if you're telling me Love and LeBron and Kyrie are playing 80 games together, that's not happening. Like, LeBron took like 2 weeks off, 2 weeks like, sabbatical last season, right? So, I just can't see it. And the other thing is, like, there's a lot of mileage on LeBron at this point. So, I mean, and he was actually not that great last year, right? So I think this is the easiest number. I think this is one of the easiest numbers on the board. It's an under, and I love the under on it. Like, I'm unabashedly on the under for this team.
Yeah, I love the under, too.
Yeah, my model, like, one of my models, and again, I think there's something kind of, and I think it's just because of the way I did the minutes, but one of them has them at 44 wins, right? And again, I think that's just assuming they just don't have these guys. I think that they're, obviously, I think the other numbers are like 50. I think they're going to be like a Spurs number, which is like 51, 52. Right, but they won't care. Particularly since I think Chicago's not going to be any good. So I mean, I think like their main challenge might come from Detroit, but I don't think that's likely. But I think I think if they win 51 games, they might clinch by March. Right, so it's I can't see them winning 58 games. I just it might be one of those situations where if they try to win 58 games, it's malpractice because it'll be like last year where they don't have anybody to actually play in the finals.
Yeah, I think you can definitely make that point.
Do you like? And I don't like the division conference or title odds.
Nope, I don't either.
Yeah.
Even though I think that they will win all of those. I still don't like the numbers are just too strong.
Do you like or love the conference the under odds?
I love it.
Okay, so we both love the under.
Yeah.
And again, it's Cavs fans, we're not saying your team is bad.
I said that I think they're the most likely champion. I love the Cavs, but not for this specific thing.
We just think 58 is just a ridiculous number for what they're going to do this season.
Yeah, there's only one team that I would consider betting the over on 57 wins, and we're going to talk about them later.
Yeah, okay. Okay. So that is it for the East. So we like, I think we like the division odds for Detroit. We like the division odds for, you like the division odds for the Celtics.
I do.
I like the under for the Bulls, and we love the under for the Cavs.
Right.
And we consider the conference odds for the Hawks intriguing.
Yes.
Yeah. Is there anything else on the? Let's see.
The Sixers over.
Oh, the Sixers. We love the Sixers overs. Yeah. We think that's a great number. And I love the.
Oh, and Orlando's under.
Orlando's under, and I love the Knicks over. I think the Knicks over is.
I disagree on that one, but I respect.
No, we disagree, but I like that. Is there? So you think any? So MVP? Do you think the MVP comes out of the East?
Yes, I do. Really? I think LeBron wins it, even though. Okay, I've said this already on a couple podcasts, and it is kind of in a way the quintessential me thing to think, which is that LeBron will win it, but he won't deserve it.
I think that the most likely Eastern MVP is not LeBron James.
Intriguing.
I think the most likely. So if I was had to pick from the field, right? So how do we get an MVP from? It would be from Miami, and it would be Dwayne Wade having a callback season, right? I think that is the one guy I could see winning the MVP out of the East.
I think there are two other guys that I would consider.
I think Whiteside is the other possibility on that team.
I think Butler, Jimmy Butler, outside chance, and John Wall.
Ooh, here's the thing. The problem is I really do think that the Bulls have to make a move to get him a better point guard. Next to him, and this is not a knock it is kind of a knock on Rose. It's just I think Rose at this point isn't the guy that they need, or they need something to back him up, right? They need something additional because they're going to wind up in a situation where they're going to wind up relying on Heinrich again, and it's going to be a real problem. So I like Butler, but that's rough. I couldn't see him being the MVP. Is there anybody else? No, not Drew. I'm going through these teams and looking like
the only realistic MVP from the East is LeBron, but I think LeBron's going to win it.
I mean,
but I wouldn't bet that. There's no chance I'd bet it.
I think that, and I'd love to check what the odds are on Wade because I mean, if I felt a little bit better about his health, I might consider it because I think somebody's gonna get the credit. If Miami's good, then somebody's gonna get the credit, and it's probably gonna be Wade, right? But I don't think it's likely that we. I wish I could take like the odds on like the West winning the MVP because I think it's very like it's more than likely that the best team in the West. We'll have the MVP.
That's totally fair. Anything else you want to say on the Eastern Conference?
No. As I said, I think the Eastern Conference is better than it was last year. I don't think they're about to write the history. I mean, they're not as good as the West, but I think it's. I don't think a sub 500 team gets in this year.
I think that's definitely fair. That concludes the Eastern Conference portion of the Overunders with Arturo Galletti. Thanks again to him for coming on. You can read Arturo at basketballnumbers.com. You can also follow him on Twitter at Arturo Galletti, ArturoGalletti. And as we talk about during this, we split the East and West into two. the East we recorded first, I edited first, and we'll be, you know, you just listen to it as be out first, but the West will be out soon. I'm hoping to get it done quickly. There's a possibility I might save it for Monday. I'm just trying to figure out how soon as I can get it done. But also put out some wonderful material with Baxter Holmes, the Pacific Division. Seth Partnow did the, and we did a season preview of the entire season of both conferences and all that kind of stuff. And then, yeah, it's good. There's a lot of content. I also have written for the Sporting News, have some other things. We're in this moment where I want to get a bunch of things done before the season starts because there will be so much to talk about then, and things like predictions. And something we talked about in this that comes up a lot, and I'm going to write a piece on it, is the concept of pick protection. I think that it is a underrated, underappreciated part of this world that we live in, and I think that it will loom large this year. Not early, but late. And so you can keep an eye on that. If you have any feedback, you can reach out to me at Danny LaRoux on Twitter, DannyLeroux. Or you can email me, DannyLaRoux@gmail.com. It is a dedicated email for that sort of thing. If it doesn't fit in a tweet, do it that way. As I always say, I read everything. I respond to as much as I can. And I appreciate it. You know, that's the way that we make this better. We got a lot of positive feedback from this podcast, and Arturo and I love doing it. So we were going to do it anyway, but we love doing it. And we were so thrilled that people were looking forward to it, and people asked us when we were going to do it again. So thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.